Tony, let's go.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
Previously on The Lawrence Holmes Show.
I think that Coby White is really fun to watch. As Schuster was saying, if you watch clips of him, you'll see that he is someone that in transition I think is very dangerous. I'm concerned about his shooting. And I'm concerned about whether or not Jim Boylan will allow him to play at the pace where I think he can be his most dangerous. And will he be a facilitator in the NBA, or will he be a point, or will he be a lead guard? I'm still trying to figure that out, and I'm sure that he probably is too.
Make me a bicycle clown.
I had a good time kind of looking over the draft from the Bulls' perspective, and I actually was like, okay, like, I don't mind either of the players that they ended up drafting, and I think the Coby White one, watching the video of him talking about his teammate that got drafted has been one of the highlights of my weekend. One of the lowlights of my weekend is watching his draft class not know anything from the 1990s. There's a great video, I think the NBA put it together, maybe the NBA or ESPN put it out, with these guys after they were drafted being asked all these questions about, like, just showing them stuff and them having to name it, and they had no idea at all of what it was. And it was
why are people surprised?
Some of the stuff, like, they didn't know Destiny's Child, Tony. Like, that one was, one of them said that, I think it was Coby who said, oh, the Cheetah Girls. I was like, it's not the Cheetah Girls. They're literally, Beyonce is right there in the front. And they didn't know, but it lets you know that things change quickly in our world. And that's something that we are going to have to deal with. This hour is being brought to you by First American Bank, the largest privately held bank in Illinois. We do more for your money. All right, it's Monday. We start the show as we start all things with a rundown.
Run them down.
The Rundown.
Here is your rundown for Monday, June 24th. I'll start out with a little bit of good news for those of you who are fans of Max Struess. No, don't play the music because that's just going to make people sad. But we should celebrate Max Struess, who did not get drafted, but did sign a two-way deal with the Boston Celtics. So that's very exciting for a kid who I think is a very exciting player.
10 to shoot for the Demons. Cameron calls out a set play. Waits for Struess. Right of the circle. Three on the way. Bang! Max Struess is hitting everything. 5:16 remaining here in the second half. DePaul's back on top. 74-72 over St. John's. Struess with 32.
Max Struess had a really great two-year career at DePaul after being an incredible player at Lewis University. And I'm very happy for him. He's a nice kid, comes from a great family. And I think that he will find his way to an NBA roster at some point. I don't know if that'll be next year's Celtics team, but I think at some point that guy's drive and athleticism will find him on the court playing in an NBA game. So congratulations to Max Struess. There's Bears news, apparently, mainly because Tony just wants to keep the bit going. But Mitchell Trubisky had his youth football camp this weekend out in Rosemont, and he's ready to get started with practice already.
I know, I'm excited for the season, and it's nice to see some family, hang out with some friends, and give back and be at camps like this to the kids, but we're definitely ready to work, and we're ready for training camp coming up soon.
A reminder, July 8th, Monday, July 8th, a whole week of Is Mitchell Trubisky Good at Football? I'm just telling you now, tell a friend, be here, be ready, because that's the week when we're finally going to have the discussion about whether or not Mitchell Trubisky is good. Although maybe we'll talk with Wani about it coming up later on in the show today. How about we do a little bit of White Sox, okay? Because the White Sox had what could have been a great weekend in Texas, absolutely ruined because they don't have a lot of starting pitching. And yesterday was another example.
Moncada to right field. Chu on the move, and this one he gobbles up to finish off the ball game. Sox mounted a couple rallies and could not ever get over the hump against the Rangers. Sampson et al.
Can I just say that I will tell you, at some point we need to have a real, real discussion about the lack of pitching that they have in their starting rotation. It has become extremely annoying to watch. And I know that they are in a rebuild year, and that is part of my frustration. Let's move on to the Cubs. The Cubs, they saved themselves. They salvaged an opportunity this weekend, because that series with the Mets was looked like it was going to go the wrong way, and that you were going to see the Cubs lose 3 out of 4 to one of the worst teams in the league. And things didn't look great early on.
Nito swings and rips one to deep left center field. This one is long gone. A solo home run for Tomas Nito. And the Mets take the lead 2-1 here in the 2-2. Ground ball up the middle and through for a base hit. Rounding third and coming home is Lagares. And he will score easily. The Mets extend the lead on the RBI single by DeGrom. It's now 3-1 New York here in the fifth.
But fear not. There was some weird handling of the Mets bullpen, which led to an opportunity for Javier Baez to save the day.
Baez the batter. What's he thinking here, Ron?
Now, to me, he's going to have to hit some sliders from Lugo. That's what he's going to see. Something off speed. I'd be shocked if Lugo gets beat by a fastball to Javi. Javi's seen a boatload of breaking pitches and off-speed pitches today. Lugo leaves one in the middle of the plate. That's the pitch Javi can do the most damage on.
The 0-2 from Lugo. And Baez hits one in the air to right field and deep. Back goes Conforto. It's got a chance. Gone. 3-run homer, Javier Baez. Listen to this crowd.
Career home run number 100 for Javi. And he hits a breaking ball from Lugo the other way. He waits on it and drives it in the bleachers in right.
Don't worry about a thing, because every little thing is going to be all right. I think that Javier Baez should keep that as his walk-up music now that Shane Victorino is retired. It's a great sing-along. It creates a great vibe. And shout out to Dante, the Cubs DJ. Like, drop it when we get to the every little thing is going to be all right. Let the crowd fill it in. So that's my task for you, Cub fans. When Javi comes up and he's still rocking the Bob Marley, you got to be there and be present in the moment. So Javi gives the Cubs the lead, and then it's up to the bullpen to lock it down.
The 3-2 by Strope. Fly ball right field coming in. Hayward, he gets there. Cubs win. Jason Hayward made a running catch over near the right field line. 1-2-3 for Pedro Strop. Cubs win the ball game 5-3.
The great Pat Hughes on the call. After the game, Joe Maddon talked about the type of season that Javi is having.
Listen, his numbers are fantastic. I mean, what else do we want? he's great. He's had a great season to the point. And then when guys go a little bit sideways, you get overtly critical. Listen, the guy's having a great year, and we're all subject to messing up on occasion. But in a tight moment, he knows what to attempt to do anyway, and he did it.
Javier Baez, according to a B-War, is a 3.1 WAR player. This year, his slash line is 284, 323, 551 for an 874 OPS. We'll talk about a couple of his teammates that are also doing it big, and one in particular that's doing it kind of quietly. Javi himself said that he didn't even know that he got to 100.
I feel great. You know, obviously, it's a lot of homers for me. And I actually didn't know it till I got to the dugout and everybody started congratulating me. And it's really exciting. I thought it was going to be a little bit later on in my career, but, you know, I really don't pay attention to that, so really happy that I got to it, and hopefully I keep it going.
And the most important thing is that it came at a moment when the Cubs kind of needed it. They needed someone to come through in a big way. And Baez has done that a lot over the last couple of seasons. They still needed the run support. And the Cubs are in an interesting place right now because of the health of their pitching staff. So it's having someone come through like that, I thought was an important moment for not just Baez, but the Cubs. It keeps the Cubs in first place. Don't look now. The St. Louis Cardinals are kind of surging a little bit, and they find themselves back in the race, as most people who've been looking at the NL Central thought they might be, that this could end up being a three-team race between the Brewers, the Cubs, and the Cardinals. So that is your rundown for Monday, June 24th. Glad that you are along for the ride. I am Lawrence Holmes, here with you until 2 o'clock today. Bruce Levine, we're going to start now the baseball season is about halfway over. We're going to start having Bruce on every Monday to just kind of wrap up some of the things that are going on with both teams. I don't want to spend too much time talking about the White Sox today. I will say that Saturday was about as angry as I get as a White Sox fan after what happened, and I don't know how much longer you can trot Despaigne out there. I know that in a year where you're rebuilding, stuff like that shouldn't matter to a fan base, but when you see your offense go out and score four runs, they spot you four runs, and then almost immediately those runs are given right back, and we've seen it a couple times this past week where they get a lead and the lead is just destroyed because your starting pitching is not representative, is not a major league starting rotation. It can be frustrating as all get out.
I just want to come in on a Monday and they're 500. Like that would be great. Where we come in on a Monday, it's like the last few Mondays, every Monday. It's like, well, what the Sox do? Well, pitching.
Yeah, Tony, I wish that we I'm again, it's one of those things where we have to talk about expectations for a team on the rebuild, that it's not fair to judge them kind of with the rest of the teams that are trying to play for something. You have to judge them as a team that is in the middle of a rebuild, and what we're seeing is a team that just doesn't have enough starting pitching for there to be any realistic dreams for 2019. But we kind of knew that. The great thing for the White Sox is that they seem to have found position players that you can trust. And now the next part of that is whether in-house and just getting guys healthy, or then starting to look around the trade market or the free agent market for pitchers that make sense, of getting starting pitchers that aren't going to do that more often than they do. That's what we're talking about here. I would like to talk a little bit about the Cubs too and their weekend, but there's so much stuff to get into, and I promise you that we're going to get into it, whether it's bear stuff or Jay Zawoski put together a little something for us on the draft, on the Blackhawks draft. We've got all that. But when we come back, I want to talk about what the Cubs do from here. Like, where do they go from here, considering the health and age of their pitching rotation? We'll do that next here on The Score. We are glad that you are hanging out with us. I am Lawrence Holmes, here with you until 2 o'clock. The crew: Tony Gill, executive producer of the show; Rick Damkamp, also working on the show. You'll hear both of their voices throughout the time that we are on today. If you're ready for a mosquito-free summer, call True Green. They'll eliminate biting mosquitoes in your yard with 24 hours of application, guaranteed. Call 1-866-TRUE-GREEN or visit truegreen.com/mosquito-free-summer. Additional restrictions may apply. See truegreen.com for details. I've said this for the last few years. I think it's funny. I think that Chris Bryant and Anthony Rizzo, statistically, and I guess a little bit non-statistically, are mirrors of each other. One plays first, one plays third. One's left-handed, one's right-handed. And their numbers actually match up with that. Check this out. I was looking at the numbers yesterday because I was looking to see Javier Baez and his OPS. And his OPS this year is 874. And because of his defense, obviously, you know, he's pretty great there. He's a 3.1 war player this year, which is fantastic at this point in the season. I was looking at Chris Bryant's number because Bryant quietly is having a really good year. Chris Bryant's slash line this year, 284, 393, 535 for an OPS that leads the team right now at 928. To put that into perspective, the year that Bryant won MVP in 2016, he was a 939 OPS. He actually, from an OPS standpoint, had a better year in 2017 when he was a 946 OPS player. Now, remember the number, 928 for Chris Bryant in 2019. Let me give you Anthony Rizzo's numbers. His slash line this year, 276, 387, 541 for, you guessed it, a 928 OPS. So third and first mirroring each other again. And you're saying, well, wait, well, that's only this year. Well, what about in 2016 when Bryant won the MVP? Okay, here are Anthony Rizzo's numbers. And Rizzo, by the way, finished fourth for MVP that season. 292, 385, 544 for 928 OPS. Not that far off Chris Bryant's OPS of 939. That year. It's pretty amazing that those two guys mirror each other the way that they do. And Bryant is kind of quietly, though he did it a little louder. He did it more loudly, like probably the middle of the first half of the season, where he kind of re-announced himself. Allow me to reintroduce myself. My name is Chris. So he did a little bit of that. But it's a fun thing to track, like those two guys, because they kind of fall into the same spot as far as the mirror goes. Some people have texted in. You're more than welcome to text in at 670-11 if you want to jump in and be a part of the conversation. A texter says, when do the Cubs just say enough with the Yu Darvish thing? They're in no position to do that. Darvish, before this last start, had put together four pretty solid starts for the Cubs. I know it's frustrating because of his salary. You can't look at Yu Darvish as a top of the rotation starter as much as you want to, as much as it would make everyone feel better if you could count on Darvish to be the guy that he was when he was a Dodger or a Ranger. You can't. You have to look at him as someone who is just taking the ball, eating innings for you. And so far, he's eaten almost 86 innings for you. And the ERA is not where you want it to be. It's still closer to 5 than to 4. You love to see that come down to being closer to 4. But you have to look at Darvish as a fifth starter type. That's all you can ask, is that he takes the ball, he makes his starts, and he's made 16 of them so far this year. I know it's a frustrating thing, but if you're expecting him to be the ace of this squad, you are sadly misled. Not that. And I don't know if he'll ever be that again. You see glimpses of it. You see the special pitching talent. But I don't know if there's anything in there other than the talent that is going to make you believe that he's going to be a top of the rotation pitcher. Now, this leads to some other questions. The Cubs rotation as a whole right now, with Kyle Hendricks being hurt, there's some starts out there, and maybe because Darvish, you have to look at him as almost a fifth starter, it lends itself to wondering if you should limit some of the starts that he has. If Kyle Hendricks is hurt and you're missing him from your rotation, do you have to keep throwing different arms out there to start? Does that mean that Tyler Chatwood should get more of an opportunity to start? Does it mean that Adbert Alzolay should get more opportunity to start, and he's getting ready to make his first start? Joe Maddon actually talked a little bit about this yesterday in the pregame and explained that you might see for a little while the Cubs go to a six-man rotation.
We're looking at a bunch of stuff right now, but I think I've alluded to it in the past. I like it before the break and after the break if you can successfully do it, meaning you have to have people that you like to do it with. So that's something that's been part of the discussion. And of course, when we're ready to do it, we'll reveal. But yes, we've discussed that.
So Joe is telling you that he's open to this idea of doing it because as it stands right now, the pitcher that you can rely on is Cole Hamels. That's the guy that you can consistently rely on. Since he's been a Cub, his numbers have been fantastic. So Hamels, in 28 starts, has given the Cubs almost 200 innings of 2.67 ERA and has a strikeout to walk of 170 to 57. So 3-1 strikeout to walk ratio for him. They're probably going to have to do this for a while. And that's just that. It's the way things are going to work. The bottom of the hour is brought to you by Northwestern Football. Join Coach Fitz and the 17th-ranked Cats this fall at Ryan Field. Matchups include Ohio State, Michigan State, and Iowa. Single-game tickets are on sale now at nusports.com. Another texter says, since I was talking a little bit about the White Sox, what does the starting rotation of the Sox look like in 2020? Well, ideally, it looks like Giolito and Rodon and Kopech and maybe Dylan Cease. And then question mark? I just know that Saturday I was enraged. I don't know if you stuck around because it was a weird 8:05 first pitch out in Arlington. But I'm sitting there and I'm like, okay, this is the White Sox. And it was so funny because Benetti even said it. The White Sox had a chance to win the series on Saturday night. And then things went so sideways in that game that they end up losing the series because they couldn't even hold a four-run lead in the first. And you know that the Rangers are going to hit, and definitely in that ballpark, they're going to hit. It's just not good. Not good at all. Here's a texter from the 815. It says, Lawrence, does the Quintana Jimenez trade become a bigger one-sided trade than Lou Brock? No, I don't think that I actually don't think the trade for Quintana has been bad. Considering what he's done in his Cub career, this idea that you got a starter, like that's what they needed. When the Cubs made the trade, they weren't out here saying that they were trading for a world beater. What they wanted was a solid person to fit in the middle of their rotation. And as a Cub, he's been that. He takes the ball against your biggest rival over the last few years, the Brewers. He's done really, really well. He's in three seasons, Quintana's thrown 350 innings for the Cubs. The ERA is at 4. That's if you did a quality start and just a quality start, every start, you'd end up with a 4.5 ERA. So Quintana's been better than that. I think that Aloy has a chance to be a superstar, but in the window that the Cubs were in, pitching was more important. And if the Cubs would have won the 17 or 18 World Series, it wouldn't matter that much to people. But you still have to get to that point. And someone's got to make those starts for you. You've got to put together a representative rotation, and that allows them to have one. With Quintana, if you're looking at it one for one, you're going to be angry for the rest of your life. You have to dig a little bit deeper into what Quintana has meant to the Cubs over the last couple years. And what it's meant is, here's a guy that doesn't get hurt. Give him the ball every fifth day, and he's going to give you a chance to win. That's all the Cubs were trading for. They weren't trading for a top of the rotation guy. They were trading for a guy that if he maxes out is probably your number two starter. But what they were trading for is, I think, what they got, a middle of the rotation guy that can eat innings and win you some games. That's it. So don't be too mad. By the way, U.S. women's team just went up 2-1 on Spain in the 77th minute with a shot from Megan Rapinoe, who took the penalty shot and nailed it. So let's see if Team USA can hang on and then advance in the World Cup. All right, we need to take a break. When we come back, I got some football stuff that I want to do. I want to talk a little bit about that. And what about the Blackhawks draft? Uh-huh. I dispatched Jay Zawoski to give some thoughts on the Blackhawks draft and what happens next for them. And we will share that with you after a timeout. My name is Lawrence Holmes. You're listening to The Score. There are still people that are very mad about me saying that Quintana is fine. And so this texter says, he's a bum. He's not a bum. He's a middle-of-the-rotation pitcher that's really inexpensive.
Is that all he'll ever be?
Probably. I think that if you're expecting him to be at the top of a rotation, that's on you. But he's been fairly consistent with who he's been since his career started. I mean, I think that he's maybe a little bit better than what he's shown. But I don't think that if you look at the variance on him, it's not that crazy. Like it's really not. Do you think he should be better, Campy? Because I think that he's about what he is.
I mean, maybe slightly better, but not exceedingly so. I was also just making a reference to Les's drop.
Oh, okay, I got you. At his height, he was a 5-4 WAR pitcher. And this year, he's probably going to be a 2-WAR pitcher. And if you're a little over 2, that means you're at least close to all-star caliber. You're a starter. That's what you get. I'm sorry. For a pitcher, it's 5. But, you know, you're a starter in a rotation if you're a 2-WAR pitcher. And that's what he is.
They expect everybody to be an ace?
No. I mean,
that's not, you know, feasible.
You have to give up something to get something. And the Cubs at the time valued getting some innings. And one could argue that they don't make the playoffs in 2017 without Quintana. And yes, are you mad that they gave up a generational talent? If you're in your window and you feel like you have a glut of outfielders anyway, then you make the move, you wish Aloy well, and you move on with your life. It's not every player that you trade for is going to turn into a superstar. There has to be risk and value on both sides. The risk is, I thought the risk was actually minimal as far as the Cubs go on Quintana, where the risk is, well, maybe he's not as dominant as he was early on in his White Sox career, but he's going to be able to actually go out and pitch for us. He's going to take the ball every 5 days.
If you ask Joe or Theo or Jed, was that trade worth it at the time? And I guarantee you they will say yes.
Yes, 100%. And while we think Aloy is going to be a star, he's not a star yet. Is he getting close, though? And this was still, you got 3 years out, 2.5 years out of Quintana before you could even see what Aloy was. Now, Dylan Cease, if Cease comes up and he's really good, then maybe we could reevaluate it and say maybe they shouldn't have given up both guys. But this idea that you're going to trick people into giving you something that you need without giving up something that they want, I think is insane. I really, really do. Let's go out to Huntley and talk with Kevin. Hey, Kevin, you're on The Score.
Hey, Lawrence. Thanks for taking the call. 3 points I like to make about Quintana that all my Cub fan friends rip this guy. Number one, who else was going to take 190 to 200 innings a year in the middle of that rotation if they didn't make that trade when they did? Number two, he's at least a 2-3 war player. Look at his salary. It's like $10 million a year. That means Theo did not overpay for this guy. And three, he's a number three, maybe number four pitcher, like you said earlier, with a 4.0 ERA. He's exactly what the Cubs paid for him. They gave up prospects for him. Maybe Dylan Cease, maybe Eloy Jimenez have a great career with the White Sox. Maybe they'll even help him win a World Series. Good for them. You know, but the Cubs traded him at the time. They were prospects. They were not sure thing. The Cubs got a sure thing. A middle of the rotation starting pitcher who could give you 30 starts a year. Quality starts, most of them.
Yes, I don't understand why people would be upset with what they got in him. He's been a 4 ERA pitcher with the Cubs. That's what his career has been. And you're not paying a lot of money for him. I also think that it's interesting that, like, that's the guy that you're mad at? A middle-of-the-road starter. Like, that's what you do.
It's been a different guy almost every week. The Cubs had a bad week. Like, last time it was Strope. And coming back from this weekend, now it's Quintana.
No, you're right, Tony. That's kind of where – that's where I talk about, like, the Cub fan has become brand new, where everyone has to be great all the time or else they're trash. And in those games when you needed Quintana to win against the Brewers, you weren't complaining. You were happy that Quintana was on the mound because for the most part, he's had the Brewers' number in a couple of seasons where you've needed guys to have the Brewers' number.
The other thing, too, is if Kyle Schwarber was hitting, that, let's be honest, that's the, we have Kyle Schwarber, we're good, we can afford to get rid of this guy who still could be a star because we think we have a star slugger in the corner outfield already.
Now, if you want to have the conversation about whether or not they've hung on to the dream of Kyle Schwarber too long, I'd be willing to have that conversation, even though he's been a little bit better at the leadoff spot. But it hasn't popped for him. Like every time you think that he's getting ready to have a big moment, he just kind of goes back into he's more slugger than he is hitter. And I thought that he was going to be more hitter than slugger. And he just hasn't developed into that. And that's part of this. Not everyone that the Cubs were really good at figuring out some of these prospects and getting them to the major leagues and then some development at the major league level. And Javier Baez, I think, is an incredible example of that, where if you remember, it was Joe who was kind of pounding the table for Baez to be a member of this team. And we've seen him grow every season. Now, not everyone has that same type of linear path. You knew that immediately how good that Chris Bryant was from the moment that he got here. And that's pretty easy, although not for most. They took a risk again and again on Anthony Rizzo, and it is proven to pay off. They bring up Wilson Contreras, and it's proven to pay off in changing it. I just don't think that this idea that your team is going to rook another team on every single move and that both teams can't get something valuable out of a trade, to me, is really silly. And I don't know why people feel the need to. But I guess maybe that's what it is, Tony, that it's a lashing out, that I'm going to lash out because Quintana is struggling, or the guy that doesn't recognize that Darvish has been all right over the last four starts until yesterday. Or this last start, it wasn't good. Those things happen.
Yeah, I mean, you may have to adjust the expectation, but that's fine. Like, when they signed Darvish, you thought you were going to get this top-of-the-line arm. He's not that. And Cubs fans should stop expecting that now.
Well, he is a top-of-the-line arm. It's just that he hasn't been a top-of-the-line pitcher. Like, he hasn't been able to put this. You can see the stuff. You can absolutely see the stuff, but he's clearly not the pitcher that people expected him to be.
The thing is, if I'm trying to remember back to the moment of the trade when, you know, us as Sox people are telling Cubs fans that don't watch the Sox much that we were saying Quintana very well could be and has been a top of the line starter. So I bet that's where some of it comes from, is that he was so good for the Sox and the fact that it still was a possibility. It doesn't mean it was a probability necessarily, but having that thought in your mind, also knowing you're giving up your two best prospects, I get Cubs fans being disappointed. Like I understand it, but you know, obviously what Quintana has probably turned into so far has been what in his range of possibilities, middle-ish.
Right. If the range of possibilities is a high two or a three. Like the floor is he's a three, right? Isn't that what you're looking at? If you're trading for Quintana, is he going to take the ball every day and can he win me a game here or there? That's what he's been. He's been a three.
Okay,
you don't agree?
Well, I'm just saying I'm trying to think of what was being sold at the time. I believe it was being sold as more.
That he could be a high two.
That he could be a real quality two, and in a small but you know best of best case scenarios, he could maybe, if you squinted enough, see an ace.
If you squinted and turned your head sideways, and maybe
right.
he was
but
going.
I think true two is what was being sold, and what a lot of Cubs fans thought going into it. Right when the moment the deal was made.
Okay. All right, I mean, I guess, but I still don't think that means that calls for you to lash out at the guy in this year and say, oh, well, it's been a bad trade. And the only reason that you think it's a bad trade is because you've seen highlights from Aloy. That's why, and it discounts what Quintana has already done for the Cubs. Already. He's been a three. That's what you're doing. And you're not paying him jack compared to other guys. When you start talking about the salary aspect of it, this guy's making $9 million. He's was he making 10 and a half this year? He made $7 million the first year that he was a Cub. He's already paid for himself. Already. So you could be mad if you want to that he's not Aloy, but I think that it's silly. Now, if Cease comes up and Cease is great, then we can revisit this. But as it stands, he hasn't been called up yet. I hope to see him soon. I promised you Blackhawks. I'm going to give you some Blackhawks stuff and some Bears stuff. Tom Thayer was on the Score today, and you need to hear what he says. We'll get to that next here on the Score.